bist. Thank you that you build up the churches. Thank you that you bring us forward.
Lobe den Herrn. Letzter Punkt greife ich auf, wenn Kritik aufkommt.
So I want to continue where the brother left. Isn't there also righteous criticism?
Der Herr darf schon was kritisieren.
The Lord is able to criticize, but if I realize in my heart there is criticism about other saints, then be cautious. Just go to the Lord firstly. Nothing can damage the church than criticism on one another. And we tend to criticize one another. In the Epistle of Philippians, it's also talking about this. There has been difficulties between brothers and sisters who were fighting for the gospel, and they were not one.
Paulus schiebt hier an dieser Stelle ganz bewusst das Gemeindeleben ein.
So here, the Epistle of Philippians is really about the church life, because it's not only about preaching the gospel that man will be saved. Yes, it is in the heart of God, but it always goes together with the church life. And I really liked the title here for this meeting, Living a Church Life, which testifies the working of the gospel. What do you think about a coach? You can take in your company if you have difficulties among the co-workers as a mediator, but who is divorced from his wife. What would you think about such a person, a coach? In theory, he can help you, but the reality of peace he doesn't have. It's the same with the church life. If we have in theory a lot of truth, maybe also have a good result, this coach could hold good presentations, and afterwards you'll think, oh, I really liked it. But the Lord really looks deeper. So that's why here in the Epistle of Philippians, it's about the church life. How we are knit together. How if we have empathy for another, that needs to be there as the fruit of the gospel. What is the core message of the gospel? I really love the verses in Ephesians 2, verse 13. But now in Christ Jesus, you who once were far off have been brought near by the blood of Christ. For he himself is our peace, who has made both one and has broken down the middle wall of separation, having abolished in his flesh the enmity, that is, the law of commandments contained in ordinances, so as to create in himself one new man from the two, thus making peace, and that he might reconcile them both to God in one body through the cross, thereby putting to death the enmity. That's a core message of the gospel. God made peace. Where God comes in, there is peace. God works peace. God works oneness. And what do we do? What do we work? It's really tragic among us Christians. I want to be free to say it once. It's really a tragedy that the gospel of peace is being preached among Christians. The truth is there and it doesn't change. The Lord has reconciled us, has made peace. But what peace that he made? Only between me and God, or also peace between one another, between all the Christians? He didn't only reconcile me with him, no, but us together with him. And how does it say here that he has brought, reconciled them both to God in one body? And if we pass along this truth, then we will hurt what is precious to the Lord. Each division, separation. I don't know if it's okay to say that it's a punch in the face of the Lord. Maybe it's too hard to say, but it's really against what the Lord has done at the cross. He has reconciled us into one body. There is only one body, and we're all members of one body. All of us. You. We all are members of one body. How can we separate us? How can that be? How can you be called out of the church? Is the Spirit doing this? No. I want to read in Acts 20. When Paul was really moved when he met the elders there. Acts 20. Verse 29. For I know this, that after my departing shall grievous wolves enter in among you, not sparing the flock. It's really terrible, but it gets even worse. Also of your own selves shall men arise, speaking perverse things, to draw away disciples after them. After them. How many heads does the church have? Only one head. So, and if there is somebody drawing away after them, is he the head? How can this go together?
Darum wacht.
Therefore, watch and remember that by the space of 3 years I ceased not to warn everyone night and day with tears. I haven't shed tears. I haven't cried, but the Lord is really wants us to be one. We need to have this awareness that the gospel is the gospel of the one body, of the one church, of the unity at the locality, but also of the one church. And we are not allowed to listen to other voices. Paul says there are wolves who would not spare the flock. It's really serious. The epistle of Philippians is really encouraging. It's wonderful. As we've heard before, what we have in a church life is so precious that we have one another. Let us not be endangered for nothing else. These men normally won't come with, oh, don't be too narrow. You can enjoy the world, you can go to the cinema sometimes. No, they wouldn't do it like this. They would come with the law. with a serious word, with more seriousness.
Wer war denn, als Jesus auf diese Erde kam, am eifrigsten?
Who was the diligent, most diligent people on earth when Jesus were on earth? The sinners? No, there were a few people who were really, really serious for God. For us, it's really hard to distinguish when God says that this people is honoring me with their lips. It's so hard to differentiate for us. But God sees into the heart. Is it about ourselves? That we may reach the goal, that we may be holy, or that we may please God. Do you understand what I mean? It's really close. Is it about me, myself, or is it really about the Lord? Do I really care about the Lord? There was a person. It was so obvious that he only cared about the Father. It was the man Jesus Christ, and in his life we can see that he didn't live for his own sake, for his own pleasure. In Romans 15 we can read that he became a man. From the throne of glory, as co-creator of the universe, he humbled himself. He poured everything out, and he gave everything up. He really wasn't for himself. That's so clear here. But he didn't just become man. He didn't just humble himself for God. Maybe you can humble yourself before God, but to humble before man, they cannot. It's really hard, because your heart is proud. How can we humble ourselves? Let us look at this Jesus. He humbled himself even in death, unto death at the cross. This word to humble himself So our heart is full of hills, full of pride. There is a verse in Jeremiah 17, verse 9. Übersetzungen gar nicht so deutlich. Da heißt es, das Herz ist trügerisch. Im Grundtext Jeremiah 17, verse 9. The heart is deceitful. In German it says, it is full of hills. If I look from the outside at you, you're so wonderful, you come every day to the meeting, I haven't experienced very terrible things from you. Yeah, in the world, I experienced some negative, terrible things. But you're really great from a far view. But if I come nearer, closer to you, let the Lord use the magnifying glass and look closer. It's like you use a microscope, something that is so even smooth, flat than the table. But if you use the microscope, the surface will get different in your eyes. You will see a lot of uneven things. Then the Lord needs to make our hearts even, the path in our hearts. That's what it's about, that we need to be humiliated. In the Greek word of humiliation, of humbleness, it's good, it's well translated. We can gird ourselves with humbleness, with that's what you can read in 1 Peter 3. We can look at Jesus. He's the only person who humbled himself before other persons. What will change us is by looking at him. Lord, I want to be transformed into your image. I give up in changing myself, but I give my heart to you and work your nature into my heart. I really like how you are. And then that's the way how our mind will be changed, how our heart and mind will be changed. This word about our mindset is a main topic here. In German, it says attitude or view. So our soul contains our mind, our will, and our feelings. If I look at the Lord and I say to myself, I want to live you, I want to gain you, I want to transform into your image, then my mind will be changed, transformed. The Lord himself, he had this mindset. I want to read of Ephesians 5, verse 2. And verse 1, therefore, be imitators of God as dear children. We can understand it. We have the same life. We can live this life. We can have this mindset. And walk in love as Christ also has loved us and given himself for us, an offering and a sacrifice to God for a sweet-smelling aroma. This sacrifice, consecration of the Lord, was really so wonderful, such a sweet-smelling aroma. We can also lead such a life. Paul says this mindset should also be in you that was in Jesus Christ, who humbled, humiliated himself until death. This is what Paul is talking about in Romans 12, that we give our lives as a living sacrifice. If we want to fulfill the law, then it's worthless, but it's very precious if the Lord can work his mindset into us. in Romans 12, verse 1, I beseech you, therefore, brethren, by the mercies of God, that you present your bodies a living sacrifice, holy, acceptable unto God, which is a reasonable service. A sacrifice in the church life, in the gospel, as the Lord has sacrificed himself, because he can work his sacrifice into us. We want to be a sweet swelling aroma for God, not by doing our own diligent work. No, we don't want to be anything else. We want to be that. We want to let the Lord be everything, that he can flow out of us. Then we are really one. Then there's no problem and we're one. We're just not one if a person wants to be somebody else. No, I want to pour myself like the woman who broke her a vessel of ointment. It was really precious, and she poured it out. Some people weren't really excited about this. They didn't like it, but the Lord really loved it, because the odor was filling the house. May the church life be filled with his honor, with that we give ourselves to him to glorify him.